Friends with Bruce.
Friends with Bruce.
I'd like to move us right along to a Peter
Nicolaitis.
Peter Nicolaitis, how are you?
I'm not only a, I'm the Peter Nicolaitis.
Now you're quiet again.
I blame Riverside. Hashtag blame Riverside.
Hashtag Riverside. Death to Riverside.
Yeah, well, that's maybe a little.
Is it Riverside, a town in California where the Zodiac Killer did some of his stuff? Was in Riverside, I'm pretty sure.
I was going to say, I'm sure there's a place called Riverside, but I don't remember the Zodiac killings. So it wasn't, I don't think I was around for that. I certainly
we lived in Riverside when it happened. We lived in California during that time. I was a baby, you know, I was tiny. I was like one or a baby or something. But yeah, we lived down there at that time.
Well, awesome.
So anyway, Peter, I don't know if you know this, but I am going to have a hard time typing the letter I for a while now.
I do know this.
Oh, how did you know this?
Because you had an encounter with gravity, a gravity-induced encounter with a solid object today. Is that not the case?
Yeah, but here's the funny part about it, though. I don't think I actually hurt my finger when I tripped. I think I heard it when I was trying madly to wipe up the coffee. And I think when I was shoving the towel forward across the carpet, I think I jammed my finger then. Here's the weird thing, people. Today, as I was coming into the computer office to podcast, and I was carrying a coffee in one hand and a water in the other, and I was watching those carefully so as not to spill, I tripped over something that's not normally in our hall because my daughter's room was being cleaned out at the time. And I was an idiot, and I tripped. I mean, I knew stuff was there. It's not like but yet I still moronically tripped over it. So I trip and fall, I spill, and then I'm pretty sure I didn't actually put my hand, now that I think about it, I don't think I even put my hands down in the fall. Then I was mad. I was just raging mad. And I went and got some towels, and I started furiously scrubbing the carpet because I wanted to get the coffee out of it. And I think I bent my finger down at that point. I think when I shoved it forward, my finger caught. And basically what happened is in my middle finger on my right hand, the distal knuckle tendon apparently ripped. So it's not dislocated. It's not even broken. There's just a ripped tendon. So it doesn't hurt super bad at all. I was spared a lot of pain, but the end of the finger droops down now. I can hold it up straight without any pain. So now it's in a splint, of course, and I got to go have surgery on it and get the tendon repaired, which is fine. And I have to say, Peter, listen, here's the thing. Today was one of those days in the Wilsey household where everybody woke up grumpy and things went downhill from there. Because my daughter's room had to have an emergency cleaning. My wife wasn't happy about it because she already knew that she had to get ready for work in a little while and go work in the hospital until midnight. So that was already something that she had on her day. And I didn't know what was going on because I was working. I was with you talking about stuff that, you know, asking you questions about different things and trying to apply it to some computer work I was doing. And then, you know, we decided to podcast. And so I was annoyed with all the, you know, I was unjustly super annoyed with everyone around me for making a lot of noise and for, I didn't know what the commotion was about. I didn't know why they brought this spring cleaning on themselves, which turns out they didn't. And it was actually a wake-up call. When I did this to my finger and I realized I'm going to have to go to the ER, I immediately calmed down. I immediately was like, you know what? I am being a dick. I am overreacting to everything today, and it is not fair to the people around me, and it's not pleasant, and I need to apologize to people. And after that, I've been in a great mood all day, even though I now have a splint on my hand and my tendon is ripped. I am a far better person now than I was this morning. I will say that for sure.
You did seem to take it really well. And I've definitely been watching you get really worked up at times over things that I wish that you wouldn't. And you took this really well. So yeah, I think this does seem to have been a wake-up call. So good. Good morning. I'm glad you're awake.
Good morning.
That was him.
All right, so let's talk about drinks, Peter, before we get into how your day has gone.
Yeah, well, we're getting a little bit of a late start on this one for reasons think? That, yeah, you know, emergency room trips have that tendency. I'm frankly surprised. I didn't think we were going to record today.
I didn't either.
You know, I was pretty sure when I heard you'd like broken or whatever your finger that like, I was like, okay, that's not happening. But here we are. So even though it's after 8 o'clock, it's like 8:30 Eastern time, my time. And I generally don't drink this time of night, like anything, not right. just alcohol or whatnot. But to commemorate this, you know, fact that we are recording, I did make myself a single shot of decaf espresso made from the Wegmans decaf espresso roast. So that's what I've got. Yeah. So it is just a shot. I've got this in this little shot style, you know, cup. And I did just make a fresh batch of simple syrup today. So this does have 1 teaspoon of simple syrup. So it's like a Cubano style.
Tip that towards me a little bit more if you can without spilling, because I feel like this is one of those movie actor things where you're holding a cup that's empty.
No, and there really is here. And I mean, let me... I don't think I can switch to desk view in Riverside. Otherwise, I would show you that it's sitting on my heating, you know, like my coffee warmer at 176 degrees. And if this is empty, I've done that before once when, you know, I had an empty cup on my coffee warmer and it, you know, turned to like plastic or something.
It turned back to the clay that it was originally made out of.
Exactly.
Yeah, the funny thing is, sometimes, have you ever noticed that sometimes in movies and TV shows, when they're drinking out of an empty thing, you can tell? Especially if it's like a stupid Starbucks paper cup or something, the weight is totally different. Even if they try, there's something about the weight. Yeah, you can't do it. Apparently, you physically can't do it. So, anyway, it's funny.
Yep.
All right. So, how's your day going?
I mean, so far it was pretty good today. I pretty much had a day off. It was a rest day. Work was very quiet. I had like three calls today.
Oh, you didn't go running today?
No, today was a rest day. So, I only walked about 6.5 miles today.
Oh, well, that's a rest.
Yeah. I wanted to go kayaking, but it would have been perfect, beautiful kayaking weather. I live a literal stone's throw from the Mystic River in Medford, Massachusetts. And I've been spoiled because I have a kayak that I can just inflate right on my back deck and carry it and set it right in the river. But ever since they did the reconstruction and the bike path, there's now all these gates and barriers between me and the water. So like all the other schlubs, I have to now put my kayak in the car and take it to a dock somewhere. And frankly, I was just too lazy to do that. So instead, I just walked 6.5 miles.
Okay, so Peter, I have to find my notes for this. I'm having a new one. This is one that I found at New Seasons. It's Silver Falls Coffee Company, which Silver Falls should be near us. So let's see if this is indeed the Silver Falls near us, because there's Silver Falls, Oregon. I don't know. They don't have anything about us. Aha! We are family owned, and we don't say
clink
about which Silver Falls it is. But I'm guessing it's Silver Falls, Oregon, just because why not? Yeah. So anyway, Silver Falls Coffee, it's their Cascade Blend. Oh, of course, Cascade Blend. Jeez. Cascade Blend Decaf Swiss Water Process. And it's a darker bean than I normally like, but it's not bad. It's pretty good decaf. Let me taste it for you. Yeah, it's not bad. I give it a go. It's the thing about this is you get a giant bag for the same $16 you get the normal size bags from the other people with. So you do get more beans for your $16.
Okay.
And... since it's not horrible and I get more beans for my buck, I'll take it. So thumbs up to more beans for your buck from Silver Falls.
Yeah. And up yours too.
Yeah. Thumbs I up. Agree.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, cool. Sorry. I got distracted. I wanted to, so we both bought Mac Minis on Prime Day last month.
We did.
Mac Mini M1s. So the original M1 processors, which is still, you know, great little utilities. I use one as...
It's still a processor in their lineup.
It's still a processor. It's still decent. Although the last time we recorded an episode, I was on one and we were using the same technology we are now using, the Riverside platform. And it was definitely choppy on my end. The video and sometimes your audio was choppy. Now, you didn't notice it. There was no recording problems as far as I know, because I'm sure you would have told me loudly and clearly if there was. But the user experience, mine like was that? It was a little choppy.
As John Syracuse would say, I didn't yell at you. It was a gentle correction.
Okay, yeah, sure. Anyway, so somehow, let's see, well, not somehow, I know. So I have remote control screen sharing enabled on both of these boxes, and one of them is in Vermont. And it was on, and I was connected to it, and I was playing around with Ice, which is the alternative to Bartender or Hidden Bar, which I've been using. And I also had a really slow connection. And, you know, VNC, I'm kind of really kind of surprised that that's what Apple standardized on for, because as far as I'm concerned, it's kind of the worst of the remote desktop solutions.
Yeah, but you also have to remember, they're running a Unix platform.
Yeah.
And tell me what screen sharing solutions people use on Unix platforms. VNC.
I know.
100%.
But this is Apple, dude. They usually do things... Oh, God. They I used know. To do things better, you know? Like, they didn't adopt the Linux file system, right? There's a lot of stuff that they, you know, overlaid their own stuff. And remote, you know, like their whole remote administration, the commercial product, that wasn't based on VNC, was it?
I think when it is. It's also $80. Let's see here.
Well, I'm thinking, App I don't, Store. Maybe it's the same. I don't know. I'm out of date. But the one Apple, that you used to purchase, like for, you know, back when Apple was under the delusions of becoming an enterprise.
Yeah, Apple Remote Desktop. I'm pretty sure it's a VNC-based client.
Is it? Okay. Well, I don't know. I'm using the real VNC, and it's a crappy experience, even though I have it on auto or lowest video quality, you know, like just spare me the bandwidth, just get me a connection. You can see it like pixelated rendering the screen very, very slowly. And so I clicked, and I thought I was clicking to close something, and what that something was Tailscale. So I quit Tailscale. So now I don't have remote access to it. But here's the thing. I've got remote access to another Linux box on the same network in my place in Vermont, but I can't SSH to the Mac. So I don't know if it went to sleep after Tailscale turned off or what. I thought I had it set to stay on altogether, but I can't reach it anymore. So not going to use that one as an exit node anytime soon.
Peter killed his exit node.
Derp.
So I don't think if speed is an issue, this probably wouldn't help. But in terms of VNC clients, Screens 5 is a good VNC client. You're not going to get an RDS type experience. Let's face it, RDS is pretty good.
Yeah, that's something that Microsoft got right, because they stole it from Citrix. So.
Right. So that experience is really good. And when you're used to administering Windows stuff all day and you're RDSing in and then you have to use VNC, yes, it is 100% painful. Yep. No doubt about it. But if you have to use something that's based on VNC, the Screens 5 client is really good. I use that for my Mac Mini, and it works great through Tailscale. It even supports Tailscale. It'll show you a Tailscale view. So when you have Tailscale running, it'll show you which ones are your Tailscale clients that you can access and stuff like that.
Cool.
It does cost money. I don't remember if it's a one-time fee or a subscription. I think it's a sub, but you know, just try it and see if you like it. And if you decide you'll use it enough, it's probably worth it. It's worth it for me. Let's put it that way.
All right. Well, if I can reconnect and, you know, get the thing running again so without driving to Vermont. And since I'm not going up this week and since I'll be heading to Europe pretty soon after that, I don't know when that's going to happen exactly. So.
You don't know when that's going to happen?
When I'm going to get back to Vermont.
Oh, right. Okay. What are the odds of you... Yeah, I did. What are the odds of you going to Germany and never coming back? Zero?
Never coming back? Slim.
The odds are, the odds 10, Peter?
I wouldn't say the odds are zero. I mean, there's, but I am planning. I mean, I did buy a return trip ticket, you know, so.
Okay, you're going to hear a can opening. It's not any kind of alcohol. I'm having a polar seltzer water. It's just a carbonated water. It's hot in this room, so I'm going to have this too. Because I've been drinking hot coffee, in case you didn't notice. There we go. All right, Peter, what are we here to talk about today? You had topics, you had things, you said things, well, you did things.
You've been doing a lot of AI-assisted coding lately, and you've been doing tons of stuff from the command line. And I've been hearing about all these people doing stuff with, like, Warp for coding and Claude Code, and you sent me a video, a review of the new version of Gemini for, you know, Gemini CLI. My AI command line experience has pretty much been limited to, in the early days when GPT-3 came out, I used it to code some Python scripts for me to do some cool things that I promptly forgot about and never did again or never used again. And then I found Fabric from Daniel Meisler, and I used that for a number of cases. And pretty much I've weaned myself off of that for everything except like one use case at this point. So what I wanted was for you to catch me up. Like, I was all in on ChatGPT, leveraging the web interface early on in 2023, right? I was heavy in that, using it constantly, finding new applications for it. I didn't really dig into the API-driven stuff, and very quickly vendors started integrating AI into their platforms and stuff. So,
no way.
You know, I was an early adopter in that sense. But since then, I haven't really been using it for, like, in novel ways. So I'm a little bit behind. So what I suggested we do today was you catch me up, turn me into a command line AI aficionado, and catch me up to speed. That's what my suggestion was.
So I will say that my experience is limited to mostly Claude Code and the Warp AI agent in the command line, but using mostly Anthropic models with that, because although they support GPT-5 now, when that first came out, it was broken, and I haven't tried it since. So I still need to investigate other things like OpenAI's Codex, find out how good that is. That's their command line thing. I need to try GPT-5 inside Warp's agent again, and I want to try the Gemini command line. Now, the Gemini command line is interesting because all you need is a Gmail. According to that video link I sent you, all you need is a Gmail address, and you can get a whole lot of tokens for free. Totally free. Yep. You don't. Yep. And so, but it's also slower, according to him. It's like half as slow.
But he also, like, in his use cases, he had it like chugging away at things for like 45 minutes at a time or something. So I'm envisioning these are things that I'm not going to be sitting here babysitting it unless I'm bored or just curious, like, hey, what's it up to, kind of thing. I don't expect, like, you know, like, oh my God, I have a deadline. We got to get this out the door by 4 p.m. Right.
It is possible, but I will say this, having used Claude Code to create a Mac app for running timers for different work tasks. So I can keep track of how much time I spent on a certain work item so I can bill it. I will say that sometimes there are times when Claude Code goes off to do something relatively simple and it does take a while and it will come back. And unless you say, don't ask me again during this session, it will ask you at certain times, can I make this change to this file? It shows you the diff and it says, can I make this change? Can I make this change? Which I do like, because I look at the diffs. I want to know what's going on. And there have been times where I've questioned it, saying, now that we made this change, isn't that block right there not used anymore? And it's like, yo, you're absolutely right. It's redundant now. We don't need it, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, why didn't you figure it out?
Very Claude.
Yeah, it is. And so anyway, the point is, there are times where I'm kind of sitting there waiting for things to happen, but it's also not long enough that I want to leave the computer. I switch to other tasks, of course, but what a lot of people do is use multiple agents at the same time, so they'll stick some sub-agents on a different task. I haven't really gotten into that yet, to be honest. So,
and again, since I sort of had a little bit of a falling out with, you know, the Daniel Meisler community, I haven't been there and I haven't been on like any of his regular tutorials and stuff, but I know he was talking about like a couple months ago how he's just being super productive with Claude Code and he's got it doing all kinds of things, not just coding tasks, but it's doing all kinds. And I've got agents working on this and that. And I'm pretty sure at this point that he's at least on the spectrum of manic depressive, because he gets like really manic when, you know, he finds new stuff like this. But what I wanted to know is like, what kind of things do you think he's doing and what kind of things can I be doing? And first, and the next thing was, I have that one use case, which I said, you know, my workflow used to be on Sunday nights, I'd record my role-playing game sessions with my friends, record the audio file, and I would just use Audio Hijack Pro, dump out an MP3 or a WAV file or whatever. I would feed that to a transcript command that comes with Fabric, you know, with Miesler's project, TS, and it would connect to the GPT API or the Whisper API and crank out a transcript. The transcript I would then feed into Fabric, which is just a prompt to say, you know, to GPT or whatever model I'm using, summarize this, you know, this is a role-playing game session, tell me what was funny about it, what happened here, what happened there, how much damage was done, how many combat rounds, who did, you know, the best role-playing, etc. So the manual part was recording it and dumping a file. And then from there, it was pretty much, you know, I had a, like one little script that would generate the transcript and then from there generate the whole summary write-up. So it was very quick. Somewhere along the way, I changed it because the recording that I was doing, for one thing, I found this Discord plugin called Craig. It's a bot agent, whatever, I forget the technical term is. But it logs into our conversations on Discord and it knows everybody who's speaking. So just like, you know, when you and I were experimenting with Otter AI for recording, rather than just using one audio stream, which may or may not be able to identify who's speaking, when you use Craig, it knows who's speaking because, you know, everyone is identified on the Discord call as right. speaking. So that's great. But now I get four or five different audio files. So I now take those, plug those into Mac Whisper and tell it transcribe podcast. So that's a manual process, right? I go to Craig, downloading it with a browser, dragging the extracted files into Mac Whisper, saying transcribe after assigning names to all of the speakers. Generally, I start that process, I go to bed. The next morning I come in, take the transcript, and then now since I ran out of API credits with GPT and with Claude at the same time, I take my Fabric prompt, paste that into GPT or Claude, and then attach the transcript file. So it's now become a very manual process. And I was like, okay, you have definitely at times said that, you know, like there are other people doing what he's doing and, you know, like it's not so special anymore. So I was like, okay, well, let's use this as an opportunity. Catch me up, because I've definitely let myself fall behind. So where do we go from here?
Okay, well, first off, I want to absolutely clarify that not only am I not an expert, there's a lot of these things that I haven't done. I haven't done a lot of the types of things that you're talking about. However, I do know that thanks to the MCP protocol, which is something that Anthropic created and everybody else is implementing now, mm-hmm. you can connect to different apps. And there are various MCP servers that are specific for certain use cases. Like you can connect to this database, you can connect to this app, so you can...
I'm vaguely familiar with what that is, but let's assume I and the listener know nothing. What does MCP even talk? What does that even mean?
It's for context. It's for model context, so that your model has
context protocol. Is that what it is?
Yeah, so that your model has the context of the information that you want it to have.
Okay.
So basically what it is like you can give, there's an Obsidian MCP. So let's just use, and there's a Notion one. So let's just use Notion or Obsidian.
I've got a lot of stuff in Notion. So that's
right.
Great. That's a good
start. So you have a lot of information.
That actually is a really great choice because I've been taking all of those transcripts and summaries and dumping them into Notion.
Yeah.
So if I wanted, say, like a historical analysis of our role-playing games over time,
Yep.
I could maybe point it at that as opposed to just this session, for example. Is that a good use case?
Yes. That's exactly why the other day I was asking you when we were talking about that use case, your transcripts, I was like, where do you put those things? Because I was thinking, if it was something like Notion, if it was something like Obsidian, if it was something like Notes, if it was something like any of these things that an MCP server has been developed for that you can connect to, you can get at that information.
Okay, that's cool.
Additionally, you should be able to connect a lot of these to the desktop apps. You should be able to connect a lot of them to Claude macOS app and the ChatGPT macOS app. Apparently, there's an update for the MacGPT app today. Let me see if I can update it. Here we go. Enable work with apps. Manage apps. So I can hook it up to BB Edit. I can hook it up to VS Code. This is ChatGPT. I can hook it up to Apple Notes. I can hook it up to Notion. I can hook it up to Prompt. I can hook it up to Script Editor. I can hook it up to Terminal. I can hook it up to TextEdit. I can hook it up to Warp. And I can hook it up to Xcode. That's aside from the other MPC servers, which are also called connectors. So if you go into the ChatGPT settings and click on connectors, there's a bunch of things that you can connect to different online services like Outlook Mail, Teams, which, hey, that actually sounds kind of interesting. Maybe, you know, in theory, you could have it transcribe a Teams meeting for you, possibly, or at least search for stuff for you. It can connect to Notion. You can connect to your Outlook calendar. You can connect to your Outlook email, stuff like that, Google, etc. So the not even just the command line stuff, but even the Mac apps themselves should have the ability for you to connect to a lot of different things and get some workflows going that way. Now, here's one thing that I used to do with Raycast AI that I haven't developed an analog for just using these other AIs yet, whether it be through the Mac apps or through the command line. And that is specific workflows. Like in Raycast AI, I would have something set up to where if I instigated this workflow, it automatically knew, you are here to do this one particular job, and I only want you to do this one particular job. I haven't found I don't know how to create a custom prompt that is separate from how I normally use ChatGPT, and I just click on it and suddenly it's running under that custom prompt. And then take that and extend it to, yes, and when I run you, not only do I want you to be acting in this mode, but I also want you to just run this workflow. Like, there should be a way for you to be able to use these MCP servers to get at the stuff that you want and also have a script or a workflow that you've predefined that you can tell Claude to run or GPT to run or something like that, and it'll just go off and do it. So instead of babysitting your transcripting your games, you just tell it to do it and it should be able to do the whole workflow for you. I haven't done that kind of thing yet. So far, my use has been, I'm asking GPT or Claude specific questions and it says, oh, I can look in these specific information things. I will check that for you. And there's been times where I've said, no, don't store that in Notes. I don't want that in Notes. Put it over here in this other thing. And then for the command line stuff, it's been, you know, basically using it to write a Mac app, vibe coding, if you will. I mean, I've used them as code assistants in different code editors before, where it's like a glorified autocomplete, where it's not doing the coding for you, but you can get it to say, oh, I bet you're going to put this code here based on this, or here's what I would do, and you can accept or reject. But the command line vibe, like Claude Code and GPT, what did I call it? Codex? Those are two different. Those are completely different. Where they're just going to write the program for you. You tell it what to do. You tell it what you want. You tell it to come up with a plan. You tell it to figure out the to-dos. You have some files in there that it looks at to keep track of what the status is and what you want from it. And then it makes the code and it just presents it to you and says, "Are you okay with this?" And either you are or you're not.
That's how I've been using vibe coding, right?
That's vibe coding, and that's what I've been using Claude Code for. And I've mostly been using the Warp AI agents for that too, although they're pretty good for other things. They're good for asking general questions of, they're good for manipulating files that you can get to through the terminal, stuff like that. So I can throw a problem at them. Like I can say, write a bash script that uses aux to do this thing for me because I can't be bothered, and Warp AI agent can go off and do it for you. So things like that. But I haven't done the type of thing that I want to do, which is figure out how to make a workflow that I can fire off from Claude or from GPT and just have it go do it, and it can access some of these resources and then get the end result for me.
Huh? Ready to beep me?
Oh,
you want to just do it? So Scott and I have this internal little inside joke. What's the guy's name?
Theo. He's on YouTube.
He's an AI YouTuber that you follow, right? And you said that, you know, he's usually pretty good. And he, this guy, we got to put a link to this in the show notes. He had, because of his, you know, influencer status, I'm assuming.
Theo T3,
yes. He had an early preview of GPT-5. And I'll stop, you know, I won't make you bleep the hell out of this section, but I was watching it and he is just like one f-bomb after another describing how blanking amazing GPT-5 is. It just blanking does it. It doesn't, you know, that used to be you have to like coerce it and blah 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 blah, and it just blanking does it. Blanking does it, just blank, you know, it's like F yeah, does it. It just yeah. F does it. F does it. It just F, like constant. And you know, I put it in the comments. I said, you know, when you effing have to use effing almost every other effing sentence, it effing starts to lose its effing meaning. And it just reminded me of like season 3 of the HBO series Titans, which was, you know, DC Comics thing, which I liked up until then. But whoever was writing it decided literally every scene someone's got to be dropping an F-bomb in like the stupidest places. And then like, and this is all I could think of, you know, it was just like, dude, when you're effing using effing every other effing word, and effing is just effing filler. So stop effing around, you know? So,
yeah, he does swear in his videos. He normally does not swear that much. Now, just for context, he was at OpenAI when right. he filmed that. And so are some other YouTubers and stuff that were known for their AI videos.
Funneling the Kool-Aid at the time.
They were, and they Drink also up. Swear they also swear that how GPT-5 was behaving for them is not the same as GPT-5 was behaving when it was released.
Yes.
And I tend to believe them. I do think they were overenthusiastic. I do think they bought into the hype a little too much. Sure. But I also totally believe that that pre-production model, that was before it was rolled out, I do believe that it probably behaved differently.
Yeah, it probably was better, and then they rolled out crap to the masses. I mean, it's not the first time we've seen bait and switches, you know, happening.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying that it was intentional. I'm not even saying that they intentionally broke a bunch of stuff. They probably made some intentional changes, and it made other unintentional changes that they didn't mean to happen or something like that. You know what I'm saying? I don't think exactly. For sure, I know that certain things that happened were not exactly as OpenAI wanted them, based on what they say. Either that or they're big liars. And you would never accuse Sam Altman of lying or saying what people wants to hear, I don't think.
No, we're not doing that. I mean, that's almost as bad as like accusing our president of lying, Scott. We would never.
Yeah, I think Sam Altman
like
is one of those people that always instills utter confidence that he's not just saying what you want to hear. So.
Of course. You can trust everything he says.
Right. Duh. So anyway, you find GPT-5 good for... I like it for being quite a bit terser than Claude. It basically just tells me what I want to know, and it does it succinctly. Now, one thing I don't like about ChatGPT with GPT-5 is that after every piece of information it gives me, when it's done, it will say, "Would you like me to show you an example of how to hone in on this one specific thing?" No, I never want those. I never want exactly what it's asking. And I just want to digest what it told me. Secondly, if I need more information, I will figure out which more information I need and I will ask for it. And I have put in the personalization section, which is supposed to be where you're supposed to tell it how to behave, as far as I understand. Never ask me a follow-up question. Never ask me if I want an example. Never ask me if I want more information. Never ask me if you want me to do this one specific thing related to the conversation we just had. Never ask me. Never, never, never. And it asks me anyway. It just doesn't effing do what I tell it. It just effing keeps asking me, Peter.
It just effing doesn't do it.
And I have even said to it, don't ever do that. Oh, I won't. You're right. I won't. Okay, great. But see, AI, these LLMs are kind of stupid. Like the reason you have a Claude.txt in your project when you're vibe coding is so that it can go back and remember, what's my status? What are we doing? What is this program even? Because literally in the middle of a session, you can be working on something and then you can say, okay, now let's work on this other thing. And it goes, you're right. Let me look at the code and see how it's structured and see what this program does. And I'm like, you wrote this, you idiot. You wrote this, you moron. And they are, they're morons. That's the thing. They have no, it's really bad. And then I showed you a screenshot of a thing I was doing yesterday. I was having it export CSV reports or PDF. I don't remember which one it was working on at the time. And it says, there, I've implemented your PDF thing and your export thing, and it works great, and it will not be crashing. It will be robust and professional looking. I run it, and it immediately crashes. And I'm like, it's crashing, and I gave it the exact... So I was running it in Xcode because, of course, I'm working on a Mac app. So it can edit the files, but it can't really... It's not an agent mode. It's not clicking on Xcode and compile and building it for me. It can build it in the command line, which is interesting because it can do the build and see if it builds, right. Which is helpful.
And we did talk about my examples with, we talked about my experience with agent mode the other day where.
I also want to talk about that in a minute too. I think it was GPT-5. No, was it Claude? Anyway, we'll talk about that in a second, but. Anyway, so one mistake that it makes is if it can build the project, it assumes that everything's working as it intended. But that isn't the case. Building the project just means it'll build. It'll compile without errors, or at least with just warnings or something. And then you run it, and then you try to export the file, and it crashes because it wrote it wrong. So you give it the error thing, you give it the stack trace, and it goes, oh, I see what the problem is, and it fixes it. But it was absolutely hilarious because in one line of my screenshot, it is crash-free and robust. And right in the next line I wrote, it's crashing. And I give it the crash message. And then below it says, oh, it's crashing because. It's just hilarious. It's like, it gaslights you all day long. And there are so many times where if you didn't know anything about programming, you would be lost because you have to keep keep track of it. Another thing about Claude Code is it all of a sudden goes, I'm going to build in all these amazing features. A time tracking app. He must want all these things. Let's import and export from these other things. Let's do all these kinds of crazy reports. Let's build out all these other features. And I'm like, I don't want any of that. Get rid of all that stuff. Quit adding it. It kept adding some of that stuff back in over time. So you have to manage these things like crazy. I find either I'm not very good at this, which 100% is possible because I've just started using these things this way. So it's entirely possible that I'm not using like Anthropic's suggested means of setting Claude Code up for success or something like that, whatever. But I have found that there are times where it just goes off the rails so badly, or it's just so slightly dumb that I don't know how all these guys on YouTube have all this massive success. Like they just say, oh, it's amazing. It does this thing. No, I bet they fought their way through it. I guarantee they did. They had to have. It wasn't just that easy. For sure, you can't one-shot stuff, but even just iterating, you have to work really hard to make sure that it's giving you what you want. And I will say, it's probably better at things that aren't Mac apps. I bet that Swift UI is not one of its super strengths. I bet if I was doing a web project, I wouldn't have the same, you know, exact experiences I'm having. But even so, I would say, if you're going to vibe code, you have to be a programmer and you have to stay totally on top of these things. So I think what we should do, though, Peter, is make a list. What I'll try to do is gather some information and make a list of things that we should install for you and try to build a workflow. So you come up with a workflow that you want, and together we'll try to figure out if there's a way to do it, and then we'll see if we can do it, and we'll see if it works, and we can talk about that at some point.
To query my specific Notion database of all of these transcripts that I have from my role-playing games would be a start. And some of it too, and other stuff, I have more player-written summaries also in a Google Doc. So that's another repository that we could, I'm assuming Gemini would be easily querying that for me if I wanted to.
I would hope so.
You know, I would think. So some interface to query those, like, has this character ever encountered this character before, right? Like, has Superman ever fought the Hulk, for example?
Right, go, so you want to... So it would be nice to have some kind of... Even if you're doing it through typing, whether it be in the command line or whether it be in a chat app, and you're typing a question to GPT, it would be nice to have some pre-configured workflow where when you open that up, it knows that it's going to be accessing Notion. It knows that you're going to be asking it this type of questions, and it knows that you want these types of answers. And then it has the ability to do that. So, okay.
Yep. That's one use case. Another would be streamlining my whole recording, transcription, summarization process.
Interesting that you talk about that.
Yes.
Because I have not done that with any of these tools. What I have used for that recently is I've kind of gotten fed up with the integrated AI note takers that will, you know, log on to your meeting for you and proclaim that they're Peter Nicolaitis, even though they're not. Oh, I love it the way yours says PN. And I think, oh, Peter. Oh, that's not Peter. It's a stupid note taker. It just so happens to have the same initials as Peter. And so anyway, I got fed up with those and I started, and I use Mac Whisper, but I haven't really used anywhere near most of its power because I mostly use it these days for transcribing Syracuse Says clips. And then I realized, because I just use the Apple Podcast transcripts for our podcast. They're so good. They're so bloody good. They're way better than anything Mac Whisper can do or any Whisper. But then I realized, wow, Mac Whisper has the ability to see that a Teams call or Teams meeting is in progress and record it. You can record it, and then you can immediately after it's done and it has the recordings, it'll start transcribing for you. So one thing I found out, though, the hard way, is that being a Mac app, Mac Whisper has a microphone setting, and you have to go into settings. Now, what I did do, though, however, Peter, is I changed it so that it follows the system default. So whatever I set my system input to, that should be the input for Mac Whisper from now on. I will double check it like a zealot for a long, long time until I believe it, but that is how it should work. Then the other thing, too, is I noticed I like to use my studio display mic and speakers for meetings so I can sit there without earphones, without having to worry about anything. And Teams and other VoIP callers, they do a pretty good job of screening out the audio coming from the speakers bouncing back into the microphone, right? So if you have the AI note takers running in Teams like Granola and Otter and all those, you won't have a problem where it thinks that you're saying some of the things that other people are saying. But I found with Mac Whisper, when I recorded you and I talking in a Teams meeting, it was attributing all of your words to you correctly and then some of your words also to me because it was getting the feedback. Mac Whisper right. does not have the ability to block that incoming reflecting audio from the speakers to the mic.
And again, that's where something like an API-driven recording like Craig or Otter.ai or something, which can
right.
actually track the inputs discreetly, has an advantage, right?
Well, it's interesting because Mac Whisper does separate the speakers. It doesn't know their names. You have to assign the names.
Right.
But it does separate them by speaker one, speaker two, you know, whatever. And yeah, so it's interesting. So in theory, you would think that it would know that the speaker that's saying those, first of all, you would think that it would be able to say, oh, why is speaker two repeating everything speaker one said? And why does it sound like speaker one when speaker two repeats it?
Yeah.
So and I might send.
I've noticed also using Mac Whisper, you know, doing the transcript to the transcription, it injects a lot of garbage. Like you saw, you know, it's like speaker one, you, speaker two, you, speaker three, you. Mm. It's like you're saying you, 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 you.
Now, you had that problem in a different case, but in my case, the only time I had that problem was when I didn't realize that Mac Whisper had its own microphone setting and it wasn't actually recording my mic because it was recording the wrong mic. It was recording a mic that I had muted. It was recording my podcast right. mic.
On yours, it was recording. But for mine, Mac Whisper was just transcribing audio files that I gave it. It wasn't Mac Whisper wasn't even involved in the recording. So I'm like, it seemed I think that sounds like a hallucination. It also I got to show you it injects a lot of weird characters. I don't even know what they are. Like,
well, first of all,
kind of Unicode or something.
First of all, there are different models that get better results. The WhisperKit large model version, whatever, 3 or 4. Let me see, Mac Whisper.
And also, let me another comment on Mac Whisper. Sometimes it puts in its transcripts, like, flawless Japanese. And other times it has detected, like, tie, not a word or two, but like complete sentences, which I assure you, no one is speaking on these recordings.
Peter, have you ever considered that you're somehow recording your entire neighborhood? Congratulations, you are now part of the NSA. No, I think now, so try it again. If you haven't tried it for a while, try it again now. I think it's much better that way. But also try the Whisper Kit.
Whisper Kit, which one?
Yeah, the Whisper Kit Large V3. It's like 3.something gigabytes.
Okay, I am using, right now, I am just using, that's what I'm using. Large V3, Whisper Kit. 3.1 gigs, that's what I've got.
Transcription models, yeah. So try it again. It's been updated, I'm sure. So try and see what happens. I did try the Parakeet model, the NVIDIA Parakeet ones, which are supposed to be really good. I tried the V3, and it's like a third of the size or something.
Yeah.
But I got a lot of errors. Like, you and I were talking about like specific vendors of services that we were talking about, and it wasn't getting those names. But the WhisperKit V3 one does get those names correct.
And V3 should be better than V3 Turbo, right? Turbos are stripped down versions.
I think so. You could compare the model size. You could download it and then just reveal in Finder and then just compare the model sizes.
Turbo's got to be smaller because I just downloaded it. Like, I just clicked it and it's a 70% downloaded. So there's no.
Oh, that's why it's called. File. That's why it's called Turbo.
Yeah, that's what I was figuring. It's probably a smaller model, right?
So it's a Turbo download.
So that in theory won't be as good.
So in the settings, if you right click on one of those that are downloaded, it should have a show in Finder option for you in the Mac Whisper settings. Just look at one that you've downloaded. Right click on it. Yeah, reveal in Finder. And then, and also it shows the size too, right beside it, if you've downloaded it. So
it doesn't show the size on the Turbo one that I just downloaded. The regular large V3 is 3.1 gigs. The other one is about it's half the size, 1.6 gigs.
Large V3 Turbo is 1.6?
Yep.
Okay. I just started downloading it to see, but you've already given us the information that we need.
Yep.
You are on top of it, Peter.
Yeah. So, yeah. And again, when I used, I don't know what model I used specifically, but when I used the TS command that Meisler, again, bundled with Fabric, that was just making it a call, a Whisper API call and doing the transcription. And that seemed to be a lot more accurate. But since I purchased Mac Whisper, I was like, well, why would I be paying for every API call to do this transcription? Plus, I wasn't sure, how I would correlate and collate 4 or 5 different audio files when I'm doing the transcripts, because I'd have to throw timestamps and then, interweave them all together, and Mac Whisper does that.
Yeah,
so, so there's a lot of stuff that I need to figure out how I'm going to replace my manual workflow with.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. The large V3 is just about double the size of the large V3 Turbo.
Mm-hmm. So. 3.1 versus 1.6.
Yeah, so it's a lot. And I believe when it's doing the transcription, I think it has to have that model loaded into memory. So just be aware. Now, luckily, it does the full recording of the meeting, and then the meeting ends, and then you're done recording before it tries to do the transcription. What I don't know is, does it load the model into memory as soon as... I guess there's probably an easy way to figure out, but does that model load into memory the minute Mac Whisper opens, even if it's not actually transcribing at that time? I would assume so, but...
Right. See what happens when you open it.
You can. So, physical memory used. So, let's close Mac Whisper. Memory used is 18.6 right now. Now, let's open Mac Whisper again.
Real-time troubleshooting here, people.
Yeah, it only went up a gigabyte. Now, if I drag some audio files, do I have some audio files for it to transcribe? Let me find some. I've got tons of audio files on my computer, Peter, because I don't know if you know this, but I am a podcaster.
I've heard that about you.
Was it said lovingly?
No.
Oh, darn it.
That guy's a podcaster.
Podcaster! Ah! All right, let me transcribe this. Okay, this is hilarious. I started transcribing and my memory use went down. Now it's going up. But not much. It basically went up from 18 gigabyte to 19. Now it's diving back down to 18. So I don't know what the answer is. I think the answer is it probably loads that into memory right away, because how much is MacWhisper using? But MacWhisper, the whole MacWhisper is only using 2.32 gigabytes, which is less than the model that it's using to do the transcription. That's bizarre.
When we say right away, you mean when it starts to actually transcribe something?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes more sense.
So that doesn't make sense. How can MacWhisper be using less than the size of the model that's loaded when it's running the transcription? I don't know. These are questions. Maybe I'll send the developer these questions when I also send him some comments about things that he might want to fix. By the way, I'm not complaining. This MacWhisper, he's done so much work on it. The capabilities that it has now compared to what it used to are pretty stunning. So I think Peter would agree, and if he won't, I'll say it for him.
I agree.
Wait, that doesn't sound like Peter.
I agree.
Nope, that doesn't sound like Peter. Peter, sound like Peter for a minute. Sound like John Syracuse and say you agree. Okay. That's no fun. John Syracuse never says I agree.
Yeah. Well, because that, otherwise Casey's tagline wouldn't be, John, tell us why we're wrong.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So what so do funny. I need to get Did you- started with these things? Right.
Okay.
So yep. I have Warp installed. That's as far as I go, right?
And Warp, you can choose the model that you're using in Warp for your
AI. I have
AI
a $20,
agent.
For the moment, I have a $20 Claude Pro subscription or $20 yes. Claude subscription, whatever. I don't know, Pro Enterprise, whatever. Not the $200 a month one. And I have a Google account. And I did do a brew install Gemini CLI, whatever command that is. That's as far as I've gotten. What do I do next?
Was it brew or was it NPM? I think it was NPM.
I used brew.
I didn't know that. Now, for Gemini, for Claude Code and for the OpenAI Codex, I believe you're going to have to use NPM. Claude Code is not in brew as far as I know, at least last time I checked. You have to do, I'm sending you a link for the setup, which I will also, of course, send to, I'm sending it via iMessage.
And Claude Code is a cask in brew.
Oh, it is? Is it Claude-code?
Claude-code.
Okay. Well, then I would do it that way.
There's a Claude cask and a Claude code cask.
Yeah, the Claude cask, I believe, is the Mac app.
Got it.
Cool. All right.
So I set up Claude code. Don't use NPM, as this can lead to permissions issues.
No. It says don't use sudo NPM.
Oh, don't
it says to use NPM install minus G, but don't use sudo NPM install minus G.
Got it. Okay, so I can do the native binary. I could Windows PowerShell. Great. I'm going to, and I know this is dangerous, but I'm going to assume that a brew cask install Claude code is going to be
I think it should be what you
same.
Need. Yeah, I believe so. Right.
So I am doing a brew install Claude-code. It's done. There it is. Linking binary Claude to opt homebrew bin Claude. All right, I type Claude. And I've been getting this warning a lot. I first started noticing this when I did Fabric a while ago. But I type just Claude, and I get this warning. All log messages before ABSL :: initialize log is called are written to standard error. I:000:00:00, blah, 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 blah. Check GCP environment, no op, blah, 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 blah. So it's something's trying to check a Google Cloud compute, I think. Jeez, I don't know what's going on. Platforms other than Linux and Windows are not supported. I get this weird error message when I do just about anything on the command line. So somewhere I have to have something like configured to call something that I'm not using.
Either that or the people pwning your machine or have it configured. So I just sent you a link to the homebrew formula page for Claude Code, and it has some interesting information there on the updater. It says Claude Code's auto updater installs to .local bin Claude and not to homebrew's location, which is fine because I assume that's where I didn't check, but I'm sure. Well, no, actually, I'll have to look. Anyway, it installs it there. It says it is recommended to disable the auto updater, which is a good idea because the auto updater always fails anyway. And then instead use brew upgrade --cask Cloud Code to upgrade Cloud Code. So I think that's probably good advice, because it seems to me I installed Cloud via the NPM route and its auto updater always fails. So I don't see any point in using it.
Great.
It's warning, all log messages before ABSL are written to standard error. Oh, this is interesting.
With disable auto updater equals one, where do I put that? Is that in a config file or is that an environment variable?
What are you talking about?
The instructions you set, it says, you know, its updater installs to /local/bin/cloud and not homebrew's location. It is recommended to disable the auto updater with either disable auto updater equals one or blah, 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 blah. Well, disable auto updater equals one. Where does one put that? Like, is that an environment variable? Is that going to a config file somewhere? And if so, where?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I don't have, that's not where my Claude install is. Let me see, where is Claude? Which Claude?
Or Claude config set, you know, auto updates equal to false. I think I can do that. That's easy enough.
Yeah.
That's what I'll do. And oh, look, usage. Oh, I know why it's failing. Ha ha ha. I aliased Claude to a fabric call to use Claude as its model. So when I type Claude, that's not what I think it is.
That's why.
Yeah.
And fabric is throwing you a message.
Yes. That helps.
Gosh damn it. You told me you were done with that guy. You said, I'm at war with his entire community and I will fight them. That's exactly what you said. Peter, get that off your computer.
I never said anything like that, but okay, good.
I heard it. Everyone who listened to this podcast heard it.
Yeah, I know, but not everyone listening to this podcast has a traumatic brain injury like you do, apparently.
Oh, it's a finger injury, damn it. It's a finger injury.
You keep telling yourself that.
It's a tendon. I don't have that many tendons in my brain.
Right. All right, so now I got to remember, where did I have my, which is it, my Z login file, or is it my Z profile file, or my
Z? Or is it your Z?
Yeah, so I aliased Claude to Sonnet. Interesting. And Sonnet was a call to say, use, you know, call fabric, blah, 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 with Sonnet module.
Do you have a bee in your Sonnet bonnet, Peter? Peter wishes I was dead. He's like, why did it have to be the finger? Why not the head?
I'm reminded of all these fabric aliases that I made. So I made one called Gemini, one called Sonnet, one called Llama, and one called GPT. So instead of saying like fabric, use this command, it was just, you know, I would just say Claude, and it would say, okay, I'm now going to run fabric, do whatever Peter wanted me to do with fabric, but I'm going to use this model. So I could easily switch without changing the default model every time. But I'm not using any of those anymore. So I need to back these up. I don't want to get rid of them altogether because I might use them at some point. And these were kind of cool, you know, functions. But
Peter, back the fabric bus right up there, buddy.
I just need to back this right up. Back it right up there. So anyway, all right. Well, that's a little bit of troubleshooting that was helpful.
Troubleshouting. It's always troubleshouting.
It was troubleshooting.
There should always be shouting involved with the trouble. Yeah. So, okay. So now you got Cloud Code installed. You can do that. And actually, I'm thinking about uninstalling the NPM way and installing the Brew way because I kind of like that. I hope and believe. I don't have anything custom really set up in Cloud Code. I've got, for projects that I'm using it for, I've got Cloud.md. I've got all the files local to the projects that I wanted to look at. So I think I should be fine. So I think I'll do that. I think you just taught me something, because last time I checked, when I installed Cloud Code, there was not a brew cask.
Right. So that explains it, though. That weird error message that I was seeing, seeing on Fabric, because I was literally calling Fabric. So it is something that happened in... So I was just seeing Fabric, so that's why that happened. Okay, so now, the funny part is, too, is I just typed Claude and I got that error message. This morning, I typed Gemini and I got that message because, again, that was also an alias to Fabric.
Why do these AIs hate me so much?
So now I'm going to just type Gemini and see what happens.
Peter,
this is totally different experience than I had this morning.
Oh boy.
I type Gemini and now I get this ASCII art Gemini with a prompt and cool stuff that's, happening.
That's the actual Gemini CLI, I bet you.
Right, which I've never seen because I was just seeing Fabric waiting for me to prompt it to do something. And now I've just typed Claude and I have welcome to Claude code. Look at
that. You know, screaming Meisler doesn't sound the same as Khan. But I would still like it to see his
chosen screen the Claude code dark theme, colorblind friendly. Thank you very much. That was very cool of you guys over.
But you're not actually colorblind. You're just wearing those glasses with the purple lenses and it's filtering some colors out for you. Hey, I have a question. What's Meisler's first name?
Daniel.
All
right, that's so now I'm prompted to log in with Gemini, and it opens up a browser and says, "Who do you want to be?" I'm clicking.
Who do you want to be? Who do you want to be?
I've got a number of Google accounts. I'll use this one. All right, Gemini Code Assist and Gemini CLI are now authorized to access your account.
Okay, beauty, mate.
You can now close this window.
Good. Close that window. Don't ever look at that window again.
So now I am back at a Gemini prompt. And all right, cool. Meanwhile, Warp is saying, hey, try AI coding in Warp.
It does. Every time I say Claude and I launch Claude Code, it's like, hey, have you heard the good news about AI agent in Warp?
Yeah, we can do that too, right?
It's so needy. I like to spread my tokens between the two. So I do use the Warp AI agent. The thing that I am trying not to do is switch back and forth between them on the same project. Because I'm afraid that they'll fight each other, even though I'm using Sonnet models for both. Even though I'm using Sonnet models for both, I'm sure that Warp AI does something different because it's just calling the Claude APIs. It's not using Claude code specifically to do its Warp AI agent. It's acting as the agent, and then it's using the Claude model to do the processing. So there is a difference. It's not the same as just running Claude code, even though I'm using the Claude model.
But the persistence would be like it's spitting out code on the disk, and then you're basically, is that not like switching between two different programmers? You're like saying like, my programmer buddy Claude generated all this, and now I'm handing it over to my friend Gemini to take over from there. Is that what you're describing?
Well, I don't know about Gemini, but like when I'm doing it between Warp AI using a Sonnet model and Claude code, yes, I tell them both, look at the Claude MD file, which has all the things I want in the program, what the app is supposed to do, all the instructions, and also I have it checkmark as it does the to-dos, and we go down the list of to-dos, it checkmarks those, and then I also have a separate progress.md, and I tell it to put the changes that it made in there. So besides the git commits, I also have a list of changes made in progress.md. Now, I haven't looked at progress.md for a while and made sure that they're not screwing it up by just saying, oh, we added these features instead of here's specifically what I changed. But anyway, when I switch, yes, I tell the new agent, go read those two files and, you know, tell me that you understand before we proceed any further. Yes. So in theory, yes. And all of these, like the Claude code, the Claude subscription and the ChatGPT subscription, and I'm not sure about Gemini, but they all have memory now. So they will remember past conversations. I don't know how much of that applies to Claude code. I don't know how much that applies to their vibe coding interfaces. Don't think it does. I kind of feel like the memory thing could be a bad thing, though, because I don't want it to remember everything that we talked about. I only want it to remember specific helpful stuff. And this is why MCP servers and giving it context, like giving it your Notion files, is helpful, because those are specific things it can go look at and query. But when you're having a conversation with AI, sometimes you're wasting time. You're saying dumb things, it's saying dumb things back. You know, you don't want it remembering that when you're asking it new stuff. So I'm not 100% sure how you can filter the garbage out of those memories. It'll be interesting to see. Don't remember the dumb stuff we talked about.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because, you know, in my specific use case, like whatever I put down in Notion, if I write notes in it, then that is like, you know, canonically what happened in this fictional universe.
Right.
The transcript is made up of what people said, right? And that's not always what happened, because they could say like, oh my God, you know, Martian Manhunter has betrayed us. Well, in reality, no, Martian Manhunter was, you know, playing as a double agent, and he actually betrayed the bad guys by thinking, you know, tricking them to thinking that he was on their side, right? But the AI could very easily think, oh, yeah, and it turns out Martian Manhunter is really a bad guy. So I could see it having a hard time if I say, like, this is all these things over here were written from a user's perspective, but everything over here really happened. And I can totally see it convoluting that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, Peter, you say that whatever's in there is what actually happened in the fictional universe. But if you remember in the Bible, it says that God spoke things into existence. How do you know that you're not the God of this existence, this reality that you've created, and you spoke it into existence? And now when you say that something happened there, it did happen there. You don't have to say this fictional reality, Peter. You're too humble. Own it.
Okay, I am God here, so saith the lawnmower man.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, that was a classic movie about hacking and stuff, wasn't it? No, it was not really. Not virtual really. VR, that's what it was. That's
VR, yeah.
Not, I was going to say, not AI, VR, yes. So, yeah.
All right, well, we've talked a long time. We have a specific chore to do for some future edition of Friends with Bots, apparently.
We troubleshooted a problem that I had with my fabric install.
Hey. If nothing else happened in this whole hour of podcasting, that was worth it. I don't know if it was worth it for the listeners.
That was great. So anyway, I set up my Claude on my Gemini. Now Claude is now saying, hey, what are you using? Claude account with a subscription. I say, yes. Opening browser to sign in.
Yep.
Okay.
See,
I'm authorized.
This is great. You don't have to use API.
Login successful. Press enter to continue. Enter. Do you want to use an API key? Yes or no recommended? Well, no, recommended. I've already paid. I'm not going to. That's it. Okay. And Claude can make mistakes. Good to know. You should always review its responses, especially when running code. And due to prompt injection risks, only use it with code you trust. Excellent. I thought you were going to be doing the code, Claude. Wait, I'm confused.
Well, here's the thing. Don't forget you can connect it to MPC server, MCP server, MPC.
NPCs. Well, NPCs that's from my games.
You can connect it to NPCs, like Elon Musk is fond of calling everyone an NPC. You can connect it to MCP servers, which I haven't looked deeply into it, but I believe that most security experts will say that MCP servers can be a security risk because of the way they authenticate or don't, and also because of what they can contain. So
next thing. So here I'm seeing my, my Gemini prompt, and it says, tips for getting started. Ask questions, edit files, or run commands. Be specific for the best results. Create a Gemini.md file to customize your interactions with Gemini.
See, this
or
is,
slash
this is
help
where,
for more information.
Right. Just like it will look for Gemini.md. Claude will look for Claude.md. I don't know if OpenAI will look for GPT.md or whatever their codex looks for.
What's the structure of those? I mean, they're markdown files, but what
they're
else?
Just markdown files. I think you can just put whatever you want in there.
It's like you're prompting it. You're just saying this.
Saying, like, for example, if you want it to be a project specific file rather than I don't have a global. Do I? I don't think I have a global Claude file. Maybe I do. Maybe I created one somewhere. But I put them in my project and I say, here's what this app does. Here's the features that I want it to have. Here's the stuff like that. But I think that you can create a global one of those as well. And I think that you can give it specific prompts in terms of here's how you behave. Here's what you do. Here's what I use you for. And by the way, you should be able to see these data stores through these MCP servers or something like that. You might not need to tell it that, but I think you can tell it that.
So Gemini, by default, it says you are running the Gemini CLI in your home directory. It's recommended to run this in a project-specific directory. So do I quit out of Gemini, make a new folder CD into that, and then run Gemini again? Is that how I do that?
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, or open another tab or open another pane in that tab or whatever. But yeah, make a new directory for your project. Like I have scripts in my scripts folder and then subcategorized from there. I have my Mac apps in documents, Mac apps. So if I'm working on a Mac app, I go in there and I have a Xcode folder full of my Xcode project. And in there, it'll let it make its CloudMD file.
And apparently to quit out of Gemini, you press Control C twice in rapid succession. It's kind of interesting.
So in Claude, you can just type exit in its little fancy prompt.
I typed exit and nothing really happened. I typed quit and it's like betting farewell for now, but it didn't actually quit. And then I hit Control C and it's like hit Control C again. I hit Control C again, nothing happened. Then I hit it Control C, Control C, and then it actually quit.
Have you tried powering off your computer, Peter?
I was trying to power off Gemini.
All right. Well, next time we can talk about what we've done with these in the meantime, because you have given me some things to think about, because like I said, I haven't done a lot with workflows, in like setting up a workflow that I can just run and know that it's going off and doing something. I have connected different apps to the like the Claude app and the OpenAI app so that I can ask it questions about those things, but I haven't set up any great workflows yet. So that is something that I want to do where it's not vibe coding for me, but it's doing some other tasks that I want it to do. So yeah, I have that on my to-do list. And you have, I don't know what you have on your to-do list.
And I don't remember if we talked about this on the podcast, but I definitively at this point know that the reason that my Finder, specifically in like dialog boxes with my browser and preview, was hanging and pausing for sometimes up to, you know, at least 7, but sometimes up to like 30 seconds at a time.
Oh, I thought you were going to say days.
I thought it was Backblaze that was causing it. I thought it might be Sophos or Sentinel One. 100% now, it was OneDrive. The OneDrive client for Mac was causing this. And today it happened again. I tried to download or tried to open something in a browser, and it was just like hanging, beach balling. I went up to the OneDrive icon, said quit, boom, instantly unfroze and did what I wanted to do. And I'm thinking, you know, most of the files that I'm having this problem happening with are not work-related OneDrive. It's all my personal stuff. And now I pay for the 2 terabyte iCloud subscription. So I'm tempted just to move all my personal files out of OneDrive over to iCloud and let that problem just go away.
Yeah, I will say that the only magic remote cloud thing that looks like a folder on my Mac that I have is I have iCloud. That's it. I don't have, and that's built into the OS. So I don't have, I never did that with Dropbox, or I did originally a long time ago. And then I stopped doing that because I heard that they were basically rooting your Mac.
Yes.
And I never did it with OneDrive, even though I have stuff in OneDrive. I don't use that. And so, yeah, I've never done that. I've always figured it was a bad idea to let those guys try to worm their way into my Finder.
And like, can't you just, it's so typical though. It's like, it shouldn't be that hard to just periodically pull this folder, send an update.
Well, I guess the other thing is when you do that on Windows, there's no performance issues.
Huh. I wonder why that is, you suppose.
I don't know. Do you think it's because Microsoft owns Windows?
No. Couldn't be.
Do you think it's because they own OneDrive?
No. There's no correlation between a company owning two technologies and its stuff working better or worse. See also AirPods.
Well, I was going to say, in the case of Apple, we know that to be 100% true.
See? That's what I'm saying. So.
Yeah. You're right.
Anyway.
Peter.
Okay.
How do we tell the loser? How do we tell the
I'll
listener?
Tell the losers how to find us. Dear losers.
No! How do we tell them to get lost?
Already. Dear listeners. Listener, I'm thinking loser is just a contraction of listeners and users. Dear losers. I will now listener tell users. Our tens of losers.
Oh, if only we had tens. Oh, if only, Peter. You are an optimist.
Tens of losers. If you want to find us, you have already found us at friendswithbrews.com. Well, maybe you didn't. Maybe you found a podcast feed. Maybe a friend sent you a link. Maybe a fellow loser sent you a link to our podcast. But you can find us at friendswithbrews.com. From there are links to Scott's personal website, my personal website, our social media handles, active or inactive, you know, otherwise, whatever status. And that's how you can find us. You can send us feedback. You might be able to hit us up on the socials from time to time, depending on our
moods. I will see
if
somebody says something to me. I won't get a notification, but next time I check, I will see that somebody did that. So
yeah. So send us a note, give us some feedback. We love it. Especially we love it. We, the two of us, love it when you criticize Scott and point out all the things that he said wrong on the podcast.
Yep.
And we absolutely love it when you tell me, you know, when you tell us how Peter was right about everything. So,
I think so.
Absolutely. That's usually how it goes. Yep. And if this makes it past the edit, it'll be a miracle.
I think that we should call our listeners bruisers.
There you go. That's, you know what? That's the best thing to come out of this episode.
Yep.
Bruisers. That's bruisers. There's the show title. Gemini and Claude make bruisers.
Make bruisers.
Cool. On that note, you know what to do.
Tell your friends.